All right, good morning, everybody. My name is Jason Collier. Today we're gonna talk about the Skype for Business for Windows client. I'd like to introduce you to my co-presenter, Rich Schwendeman. Rich, you look nice today. I love what you've done with your hair. We'll be talking about this. For those of you that don't know me, I'm a customer engineering architect in the product group. I work on the Skype operations framework, so I help customers all around the world deploy our E5 offerings. So Cloud PBX, PSTN Calling, PSTN Conferencing, Cloud Connector Edition, things like that. Prior to my current role, I worked in the beta team for about 18 months. So that involved all the pre-release clients for Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, Rigel, everything, I'm forgetting. There's 22 of them, so I'm curious how I only got stuck at 6. So what we'll talk about today is the Windows client. We'll talk a lot about Click to Run and MSI. Anybody in here know the differences? Good, one of you is gonna take Rich's place. No, I'm kidding. So here's a look at the agenda. So we'll talk about our installation options for the Skype for Business client on Windows. We'll talk about release cadences. Anybody in here using Skype Meeting Broadcast? Besides Microsoft. Microsoft? Oh, one of my customers, that's good. You better be using it, I helped you set it up. So we'll talk about deploying updates to the Skype for Business client, and then ongoing innovations with the Skype for Business on Windows client. So we're not gonna talk about the Mac client in here. That was yesterday, it was a great session. Thank you for everybody that came. Very open dialogue in here, so if you have questions, feel free to raise your hand, shout them out. I'll go ahead and stop, we'll do the question and answer. We have 45 minutes, so I've got a few slides we'll go through. We'll try to keep it jovial. So we stress, encourage, highly recommend Click to Run. Click to Run is where you're gonna get the most features updated and released. Anybody using 2016 MSI client? Yeah, so we don't have the producer controls in there for Skype Meeting Broadcast. We're able to get those released quicker in the Click to Run. We release those new features in the Click to Run builds, not in the MSIs, so you wanna be in that Click to Run train. You wanna migrate over to that. Is anybody only MSI in their organization? Wow, okay, that's not bad. So ease of management, you're gonna get immediate access to the latest features. Installs that fail, self-healing installs. You can do a repair. Missing features don't get laid down. You run the repair, they get laid back down. Versioning, I can ability to roll back. So I deploy a click-to-run build. We'll call it build 1876, right? And it breaks some legacy CRM application, third-party app. We can go ahead and roll that back fairly easily, fairly quickly. Customizable, so we can customize and select which features get installed, which components get installed. We do that through the use of a customized XML file, so that's how we can go ahead and customize those. So installation options. Again, you're gonna hear me talk click to run, click to run, click to run. That's our preferred method. Designed, so Rich updated my slides, yay. So automated to streamline those updates and patches as they're released. Takes up less disk space versus an MSI installation. Ideally, organizations aren't having disk space concerns anymore. The days of 10 gig, 20 gig hard drives should be of the past. User-based licensing, so 5 installs per user. So this is super cool for me. I log into, you know, portal.office.com. I can install on my work machine. I can install on my home computer. I can install on my kids' computers. Wait, did I say that? Yep. So MSI, so manually installing updates and patches. So think about SCCM or software deployments. These are the way I'm gonna be deploying these patches. Some organizations look at MSI as maybe it's a little more easier to deploy those patches. But it is a legacy method. You definitely want to get on Click to Run versus the MSI model. So as I mentioned, producer controls for Skype Meeting Broadcast is a good example. We have no plans to roll those into the MSI build because we can't apply those in those updates. So if you want to get those innovations we're offering, you're going to need to be on the Click to Run platform. So which platform is right? 32-bit or 64-bit? What do we recommend? You win the empty water bottle up here. Sorry. Rich has our swag. So 32-bit is typically recommended for most user installations. Extensions into ActiveX, third-party add-ins are typically 32-bit, so anybody that's wrote in a customization are going to be 32-bit only. So 64-bit is going to be in those customized, unique scenarios. So maybe you've got the Excel user that's using Power Query, other applications. Project is another one, I believe, that can require 64-bit for large project plans. Oops. So compatibility issues can exist. So another scenario that we run into a lot is maybe you've got 32-bit Office and you've got to run the meeting migration tool. Now you've got to pick, do I need the 32-bit or the 64-bit? Now this tool is run by your end users. Do they know the difference? It can get some challenges back and forth there. So mixed platforms, running a 32-bit of the Skype for Business client and then 64-bit of Outlook is not going to be supported. Most times the installer will catch it and block that. And then my favorite word, bitness. There's no support for upgrading from 32-bit Office 2010 to 64-bit newer versions. So release cadence. The next 45 minutes will be spent on this slide. So we'll talk about our release cadence. So this is a bit of a confusing story to explain. So we have a standard release versus first release. So default, you receive updates when released broadly. So we have what's called CB, which is current branch. We have CBB, which is the current branch for business. And then FRCBB, which is your first release for current branch for business. So this really is going to determine how often your users get these updates. So quite often in a support role at Microsoft, we'll ask you what version you're running. And then we have to go do this math backwards to see where you're at. And it really depends upon how aggressive the organization is. I wish he was in the room. Is he? Nope. So I heard a quote yesterday. When you're on the bleeding edge, you sometimes bleed a lot. And his organization likes the bleeding edge. So they want those new features and updates. They want the current branch. They want to get it immediately. His organization was tap beta across Polycom, Microsoft, Oracle, Cisco. You know, he's like, we run everything alpha. Other organizations, maybe government entities, don't want to innovate as quickly. They don't want to get the features quickly. Anybody have end users that react poorly when something changes? So anybody remember our last update we did that kind of made everybody a little unhappy? April 1st, last year, what did we do? Best April Fool's joke ever, right? We released the new Skype UI. Now, if you're in that branch, you're getting that immediately. Your users get that immediately. Now, what do most organizations want to do? They may want to stagger this. They may want to prepare users, give them readiness information. You know, I had a customer that had 350,000 end users that were getting the client, and they printed all these materials, and it had the link 2013 UI. Well, when they got the Skype UI on April 1st, then all their documentation was out of date. So you can stagger those. You can say, I want every 4 months. These are the default branches. So business SKUs and Office 365 are going to get the current branch. Enterprise SKUs, typically enterprise customers don't want to be as, I don't want to say innovative, but maybe as impactful to the users and giving them those updates as fast as possible. Any questions on this? That went better than expected. So configuring your release trains, extremely difficult to do. Log into your portal, select a radio button. So log into portal.office.com. I go into the admin center as an admin, and I can then configure how often I'm getting those updates. So every month or every 4 months, And then I can say which additional applications I want to install. Super easy. So typically, you know, and this is kind of the mantra you'll hear from my team is, typically the default settings are your recommended settings, and that's what we're recommending for organizations. So Microsoft, we're big on the Christmas tree, the red, the green table. So what we're talking about here is side-by-side installations of the same version using different setup technologies. This matrix right here took us about a month to vet. So installing side-by-side MSI, click-to-run, which click-to-run SKUs were in, Pro Plus or Business, and then 2013, 2016 MSI. Good slide to take a picture of.
Or download.
Taking the picture is easier. So let's talk a little bit about the distributions and the options we have for deploying updates. So automatic from the internet. So we do the Microsoft automatic update. So client computers automatically install the updates when they are available. So patch Tuesday, right? Updates are getting rolled out. Your users get them automatically. Maybe your organization wants to take that control, that automatic updates. We had breakfast this morning. Gentleman told us that, I forget what the patch was, some patch rolled out and it broke their CRM application, which is tied into billing, which is tied into payroll, and none of the employees got paid. That's valid. I may not want to auto-update that one. So I can select to install the updates from an on-premises location, so maybe SCCM or some other software configuration management tool to deploy those updates out to my users. And then manual. So an organization like Microsoft, we may say we're releasing a brand new, I'm gonna tell you about a new product launching. No, I'm kidding. Releasing a new build of Notepad on Friday, right? So we don't wanna update any of the devs for the 2 weeks before the launch event, right? So we may do that manual, or we may suspend updates. Another, you know, retail organizations. Anybody in retail organization? When would be the worst time to push updates to retail workstations? Christmas, holiday, Thanksgiving, right? So those may be different business cases. And it may be different with retail front office, back office, how we handle those updates. So I'd say allow automatic updates is the best. Right, so everybody's current, everybody's on the same build. You may have your onesie, twosie machines that don't patch, don't update, and don't get those delivered. So we recommend the current channel for those users. Those high touch, those high maintenance, high customization endpoints is where we would recommend the deferred channel. This is, you know, I've got a QA environment. I'm testing the patches on those workstations. One of the questions that comes up a lot when I meet with customers is, how do I test the patches? I've got everybody configured to my production tenant. Anybody here have a dev tenant? Dev tenants are great. Have a dev tenant. I had lunch with a customer yesterday, and I about fell out of my chair. They said, we don't do anything in production without testing it in our dev tenant first. I was like, I like you. You're going to be my new favorite customer. He's like, yep, any change we do, we're going to validate in dev test before it goes into production. So they get their dev tenants. They have desktops connected to those dev tenants. They're on the current channel. And then his users are on the deferred channel so they can validate those changes. So with Office 365 Pro Plus, we have a couple of different update methods. There's an update scheduled task, so it runs every Sunday, Tuesday, and Friday at 3 a.m. It happens on user logon. We need to tell Rich there's people standing in the aisles. That's how packed the session is. So user logon, so three attempts separated by 30 minutes each. If you're having problems logging on, you log off, log on, log on, log off. We don't want to go trying to push patches or updates. So user initiated. How many folks think their users actually go out and do this? You'd be surprised. End users are a curious little bunch that'll go out, and I've had customers where the users buy software to use with their business applications. They never tell IT because that's outrated, so they deploy it and then see what happens. We can also do this through command line updates. So we can execute a file on the user's desktop. So the Office click-to-run client.exe. You can pipe a switch of, you know, update and then user. And then we can say what version to update to. Any good reason to do that? Maybe I know, and I'll pick on a product of ours, video-based screen sharing. There may be a specific build that I know works with the video drivers at my organization. Anybody using HP Pro Elite Books? Yeah, so there's some real tech driver issues that cause some issues. You may pick a specific build because it works with legacy drivers on your desktop images because you can't upgrade your desktop image. So those may be specific reasons you go and find a specific build that works for you. That's a horrible situation to be in, by the way. We don't want you to be in that situation. So we can deploy these client update settings through an XML file, and you can say, you know, updates enabled, true, false, where the update path is, you know, UNC share, local, web address, target versions, a deadline for the upgrade to be applied. We also can do this via group policy objects. It's a fairly common scenario we see out there is users using, or admins using GPOs. With the GPO, we can do things like we can enable automatic updates. We can hide the option to enable or disable updates. That's always the worst is when end users start tinkering with settings that we're deploying. There's a couple links. I don't know if you can click those in here. So how do we test? So define and configure a pilot group. So we can do this via GPO. So we can configure a pilot update source path. So we can run the setup.exe/download, specify a customized XML file with specified customized build or source path. We can create scheduled tasks to automate that on, say, our test users. So some organizations have lines of business where they have these IT power users. A customer yesterday was calling them Rangers. So those are the folks in their organization that want to get those builds quicker. And then they validate the lines of business application and they say, you know, oh, hey, Brian, guess what? You know, this update is going to break, you know, this Excel add-in that we use for payroll. And then they can stop those updates. And then again, we can use that Office click to run client.exe. With slash update, and then we can specify the version to update to. Is anybody using a pilot group before deploying updates to their environment? Wish that was more. You guys win kudos. You know what? Brian Nice, front row, buying everybody a soda when the session's over. He's got it logged in right over, right across the hall. He's got a cooler set up over there for you guys. So let's talk about innovations. So we brought the Skype UI out about a year and a half ago, and that was a big change for us. We wanted to unify that view and kind of give you the Skype consumer, Skype for business experience with, you know, similar look and feel, right? So it didn't make sense for us as an organization as Skype to say we've got one client that looks like this, one client that looks like this. So we did a ton of usability testing and we kind of brought that together. With that, we were then able to start improving the client. And one of the areas we focused on, and we have this mantra for 2016, and we hear it probably every meeting, is quality, quality, quality. Our goal in 2016, 2017 is to improve the client. And so we've been doing that. We focused on meetings, which we talked about this yesterday and we kind of touched on it. We have tons of telemetry in our application. We look at what does everybody use with our product. Anybody know that was not here yesterday, what's the most used feature in meetings? Desktop sharing. So least used feature? The whiteboard is video. Video's pretty close. The whiteboard's right out there. So things we've done in the meeting. Single click desktop sharing with one monitor. So if I don't have two monitors, I present the desktop. Do I need another box that comes up and says, click the monitor? I only have one monitor, come on. So we did that. Meeting join without a mic or speaker. So that was fairly popular. We also, for those that skipped the mobile session to be here, we also did that recently in iOS. We call that an audio-less meeting. So I wanna join a desktop share on my iPhone, but I don't want audio coming out of the device. And what you'll see what we're doing, I know this is Windows client only, but we also try to roll out all these changes to our different clients. We have like 17 different clients across the board, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Link Room System, Skype Room. So we try to bring these feature functionality to those clients. So more optimal sharing of real estate. So desktop sharing, when I share the desktop, I want to see the whole desktop. I don't want tons of controls and video photos and everything taking up the space. I want to be able to view that thinner stage or that thinner sharing area. So my favorite feature, so Brian and I work together, and we'll get on a meeting, and he'll share his desktop, and he says, hey, bud, tell me when you can see my desktop. Now, we do a little orange bar across the top that says, everyone can see your desktop. Anybody notice that? We still say it on the meetings, though, right? Hey, let me know when you can see my desktop. So you got to change those mindsets, right? So prompt to switch audio. So this happened to me the other day. I was doing the world's worst audio recommendation. I was on a conference call on my speaker and mic integrated on the device. And I was like, oh, I want to put my headphones in for when I move in 10 minutes. So I plugged my headphones in and I got the little prompt. Hey, do you want to switch to the headphones? And what did it not do? It did not put the call on hold, which was super cool. So another good change we made. If I connect a second monitor, so I'm on a desktop, I can connect to the monitor during a meeting, which most of us probably do not do. 17, 43, 52 tonight. He's trying to count everybody in here. 72, 16. Everybody get up and move chairs really quick. Auto-hide the sharing of the toolbar. So when I present my desktop, one of the things that happens is I get the little presentation bar at the top. That thing auto-hides now. Does anybody like that? I like it. I find myself pinning it occasionally, and sometimes I pin it, sometimes I don't. But we auto-hide that sharing toolbar because, again, what's it doing? It's blocking the screen real estate of what we're seeing. My favorite would be I was doing a desktop share, older build, and the little sharing bar was covering what we were trying to read at the top of the screen. I'm like, can you move the box? Our box is in the way. So video-based screen sharing. So we introduced video-based screen sharing into our clients to address a couple concerns. And I already let the cat out of the bag on this one. When we would share our desktop, the first thing we would say is, let me know when you can see our desktop. Did it take a while? Took too long, right? Took about 10 seconds on a good day, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, sometimes longer. What that was is that RDP instantiation process, the negotiation, all of that to stand up, took time. And what else was the problem with RDP? TCP based, right? Lower frame rates. So we introduced video-based screen sharing. One of the things we did with the developers, and they hated this. So when I was in beta, the way we tested this, we'd fire up a YouTube video. Anybody ever try to share a video in RDP? Horrible, right? You're like frame 7, frame 19, frame 42. So definitely not a good use case of sharing videos, but that's how we stress tested or validated video-based screen sharing or VBSS. So VBSS, 15 frames per second, RDP, 8 frames per second. Obviously, you're gonna get a better resolution, better experience. Works better in low bandwidth scenarios. So on our troubleshooting session on Tuesday, we showed a 10% packet loss network. Anybody ever have those numbers on their network? It sucks, right? You start getting tiles, right? And you're like, okay, wait, I'm still seeing this. Or, you know, the presenter says, hey, I've got Word open, and you're like, yeah, I just saw you click the start button 7 seconds ago. So video-based screen sharing handles those networks tons better. The one caveat I would use, and I apologize, so we had a TechNet article that said, video-based screen sharing uses less bandwidth. It was wrong. You know who wrote that article? My apologies. So it's fixed. It was Rich. Right, Rich? So it can use more bandwidth if available. So it's kind of like the Netflix model, right? If I've got a ton of bandwidth, I'm going to consume more. I'm going to give you that better experience. It's UDP-based. So what's the differences between UDP and TCP? TCP, if packets don't get there, what do we start doing? Resending them. Why would packets not get there? Packet loss. So now what are we doing? We're only making that problem worse. Hey, you're dropping 10% of packets? Let me send more. What could happen? So definitely more reliable. We do have, being blunt, being honest, we do have some video-based screen sharing or VBSS issues. There are some client builds that don't work well with some video drivers. We ran into an issue with Excel 2016 pivot tables with a third-party add-in caused video-based screen sharing to crash. Now, turns out three customers had this before, but they took the approach of disabling VBSS versus trying to find out the cause. My mantra is, please don't disable it. You know, hold Microsoft accountable. Work with us. We'll get it fixed. We'll figure it out. And I'd say definitely hold us accountable. So VBSS, more frames per second, transport protocols. We talked about TCP versus UDP. Backwards compatible. So anybody here spend their time in Snooper and UCAPI logs? So you will notice that we do keep RDP signaling active. We do that for fallback scenario, right? So VBSS is instantiated. Here comes Brian. He joins from a Surface hub, and I need to fall back to RDP. Well, I've already got that RDP signaling going on, so it falls back quickly. So legacy clients will use RDP. So if I'm in a meeting with everybody using 2016, we're using VBSS, here comes in Link 2010, Link for Mac, the current Skype for Business for Mac client. All of those will fall back to RDP. Anybody know any other ways I can do a fallback that was not in my troubleshooting session? Request control. So sometimes I do that. So I have horrible eyesight. I got LASIK like 15 years ago when it was kind of the fad. And I went to the low-cost center in Ohio, so it might be time to refresh. So sometimes the screen's a little blurry for me. I can request control. I can get that clearer screen resolution. I can start up the recording manager. That's another way to invoke fallback. So pros and cons. So pros of VBSS, more reliable, more frames per second, can share videos, 3D applications, UDP versus TCP. Honestly, to me, the quicker is the better. In a meeting with 50 people, 10 seconds lost equates to dollars. Cons, can and will use more bandwidth. So if you're in an environment where you've got folks that are, I had a customer in Seattle where they had, the SWAT teams had little trailers on the piers. And so they were on a satellite connection. So them using VBSS was not a great scenario. So we could use a policy to disable video-based screen sharing for those users. So here's the client version supports for VBSS. We did have some issues with the Surface Hub around video-based screen sharing. We did have one of our users report that fairly quickly, a guy by the name of Satya. So we got on that one fairly quick. The best was, it was like Friday, 6:30 p.m. The building we work in is in downtown Bellevue. And I'm like, all right, it's time to call it a night. And I get a pop-up on my client from, you know, my boss's 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 boss. And I'm like, he's chatting the wrong person. He's like, you there? Everybody wants to sign out. And they're like, hey, I need to write a KB article. I was like, oh, can I do this on Monday? No, Jason, you're dumb. For conferencing, VBSS support does require some server-side updates. So Paul and I are 2016 client, build 1,000 or higher, we can use VBSS. In order to use it in a conference, the MCU needs to be VBSS aware. So 2015 customers need to deploy cumulative update 3, and then Skype for Business Online is fully patched and deployed to all 80 bazillion tenants. Anybody heard of DocCollab? Besides you, Brian. So DocCollab, and I've got to ask, we released this a year ago? Year ago. So what we can do is we can collaborate on an Office document. So, and when I go to the present option under the mic, under the monitor icon, I can collaborate on a Word document. So it's not a full desktop share, it's not a full application sharing scenario, but we're collaborating here. So we're using OneDrive for Business, so OD4B. We're co-editing the document concurrently, and everyone can see the changes in real time. So in our job, we produce a few documents on my team. Anybody gone to the Skype Operations Framework website? How many docs do we have? 125 documents. So we work on documents quickly, frequently. So Doc Collab for us is huge. You know, instead of emailing Brian, hey, Brian, check out this attachment. Brian sends it to Amber. Amber looks at the attachment and says, oh, God, his spelling's horrible. Let's send it to Paul to fix. We can do a Doc Collab session. We can collaborate on this document. Sure, we can do that with a desktop share, but this is faster, easier, and a little bit more native and feature-rich. Anybody using VDI? Couple folks. So we've got some VDI announcements. This is, I'm the first. First to announce? Maybe second. So we now have support for Skype for Business 2016 Click to Run in VDI. Paul's wiping his head. He's like, oh, where did he pull off of? Yeah. So new partnership. So Paul killing me because when I wrote this slide yesterday, for whatever reason, it kept coming up Cisco, and he's like, it's Citrix. And I was like, okay, got it, Cisco. And he's like, Citrix, it's a C. So it's a new partnership between Citrix and Microsoft. So full native user experience in a VDI environment. So Citrix Zen app, Zen desktop, full support there with 2016. We've got a great partnership with Citrix. That one was not on purpose. So comprehensive functionality, AV and telephony functionality is there. So a lot of organizations, this clicker is, a lot of organizations have invested in VDI. Did you get this? Did you get it? Did you get the picture? You got it. Offline messaging. Anybody who's seen offline messaging pop up yet? Were you caught off guard? This user's not online. We'll send them an email. And you're like, wait, what? Shut the front door. So offline messaging is for peer-to-peer conversations. So what this means, you can see up here, I'm sending an IM to, I think it's Colin, and Colin's offline. So there's that little tooltip down the bottom that says, I can't see it. Colin is offline. They'll get this as a missed message. So you can see down in the bottom right, Satvir's logged in. And he's got a little pop-up that says you have one missed conversation. So what happens for me is I sign out, I go to the cafeteria in my building, and I get an email that somebody sent me an IM. Or we have a bot that sends an IM for an outage, right? And I'll get that as a missed email. The way this works is fairly slick. When I talked to the developers on this about a year ago, I was pretty impressed. So they said, well, we have this conversation history code that uses the history spooler folder. It writes up into Exchange Web Services. I'm like, cool. So did we write a whole new functionality? He's like, nope. I changed the properties of the mail object. I put in the conversation or in the history spooler folder, and Exchange just mail routes it for me. I'm like, So one line of code? He's like, yeah, it was a few more than one. So you can read your missed messages in your email. So you get them on your phone. You see Skype for Business when you log back in. You get this unread count right over here on the client that shows you how many missed messages you have. And you can view them on your devices. Accessibility. So this is, you know, a very important feature for us. So these are folks that maybe it's visually impaired folks that are using screen readers. Anybody support those? Okay, so we have a team at Microsoft that works on accessibility. So we made a ton of improvements on the accessibility front. So what we've done is we've basically worked with and aligning with JAWS and the other screen readers to make sure we get the announcements working for inbound IMs, phone calls, meeting invites, the keyboard navigation, tabbing properly, tab orders is critical for visually impaired folks, text contrast. So text contrast in high contrast and regular themes. So that contract is contrast. Tabbing, again, we fixed the tabbing so you can actually tab through open chats. These are things that we in this room have probably taken for granted, but folks that rely on that to, you know, hear their messages and ability to navigate through those with screen readers is a bit difficult. So one of the things I want to bring up for this, we worked with, and I won't say the entity's name, but in, it's okay. So I had Washington State as a customer. So we worked with their Washington State School of the Blind in our tap and preview programs. And so we went out and we said, we need your feedback. And we went to these users and they were like, huh, awesome. Here's our 50 most biggest gripes. And we're like, okay, cool, we'll fix those. What else? So one of the big things we do is we have a preview program at Microsoft, skypepreview.com, where customers, you guys out there, can sign up to evaluate our products. There's roughly 22 trains going on right now. Everything from Cloud Connector Edition 3.0, Skype for Business for Mac, Skype for Business iOS, Android, Windows Phone, multi-factor auth. I got to 5 this time. Yes, I did. I got a few. Rigel. Man, I can't remember the other ones. So we have a ton of those going on. We want you to go to skypepreview.com, sign up for these. The value add for your organizations is you're going to be able to see these features come out to these clients. Maybe a whole new product, maybe a whole new feature. Anybody not in the Mac tap preview? You could sign up and then start evaluating the cumulative updates that we're releasing. iOS 10 just came out. We're having some challenges with iOS 10. At least I am. It seems to crash on me constantly. But if your organization's an iOS shop, you can get that iOS client and evaluate and contribute and give feedback. One of the things we find in our programs, you know, we may find corner cases. We worked with a guy yesterday on location-based routing. Anybody use an LBR? So fairly common with offices in India or United Arab Emirates and things like that. And we found, you know, hey, there's an LBR scenario we didn't think of. We can fix that, get that code fixed, get it released quickly. So the Q&A slide is missing. So I've got about 10 minutes left for questions and answers. I would ask that you caveat this. Please submit feedback, but in the comments put, Rich was great. He did perfect. So we've got 10 minutes for questions and answers. I've got Paul from marketing up here that's gonna be able to answer any questions as well. So let me know, does anybody have any questions?
Hey, can I clarify one statement that, well, I probably could start with an entire session to clarify, but no. This is something that is maybe a little late breaking for projection, but the Mac program is temporarily closed. We were targeting roughly 2,000 preview customers. We got a little bit more, 20,000 preview customers, and I began watching
So they could still sign up, they just wouldn't get accepted.
No, again, so let me clarify another statement.
You can still sign up.
You can sign up, but you won't be able to select the Mac program. We've hidden that just to try to ease the confusion.
So what Paul's saying is go sign up.
So, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there shortly. I appreciate your patience on that. Any questions for Jason?
On the Skype for Business Mac preview program.
Yes, since he's clearly an expert on it. Sir?
I got one on the click to run. So you set up your click to run containers, and you have your container for the first branch and the first reason for the branch. If you have the opportunity to roll back, you stated earlier. So I go ahead and I look at these directories, and now I have files dating all the way back to April. How many do you really recommend?
So, cliche answer. Yeah, so the question is with the rollback, we keep the files local on the workstation. Just give me the rollback options, and eventually that can take up a bit of disk space, right? Oh, so on your server. So I guess the short answer would be it depends for your organization. You know, if there's a scenario where you're fairly confident you're not going to have to roll back, but if you get your very important user, Paul Cannon, who you decide you need to roll him back 12 different releases, you need that file out there. So it really depends on your organization. How much rollback capability do you need? And then how much disk space do you have, right? So disk space is typically fairly cheap now. You know, that's an old answer. Put your storage in Azure. That's a new answer, right? So it really depends. There's no concrete solid, you know, keep 3 versions, keep 6, keep 7. It really depends on your environment. How have you had to use rollbacks?
No, I haven't.
So what I'll tell you is if you delete them, you're going to need them. Right? You're going to be like, hey, Ian, I deleted them today. Cool, we need to roll back. True story. Yep. If you ever saw my desktop, you'd get concerned. This is a guy that does housekeeping. Not really. I mean, I think it would say, I think people are going to say, I hope people would say the same thing as me. It depends on your organization. You know, if you're a healthcare organization, you know, and your computers are being used to power life-saving equipment, I would want to have every version since the beginning of time. If you're Microsoft and your desktop stops working and you can go re-image it in 30 minutes or less, I'd tell you not to worry about it too much. So it depends, you know.
Other questions?
That one was okay. It is in peer-to-peer. So it came peer-to-peer first. So VBSS was in 2016 clients first, and you could do it peer-to-peer. MCUs came second. So it does require the 2016 client build 1000. Who said yep? Microsoft, I'll trust that. And it's Joe. He's from Arizona. You can trust him. Yeah, it should work. Yeah, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter. Yeah, so, and I can't see the question, so I'll. So any support for VBSS with federated partners? Yeah, absolutely. So the codec negotiation, candidate list negotiation, if both clients can negotiate and support VBSS, we'll support it. It really depends upon whether or not the MCU is capable in a conference. Peer-to-peer is, you know, obviously a different scenario. I got too close to the edge. Yeah.
Other questions?
I got a question over Skype from a colleague.
Let's put it up here.
He's running a server 2016.
Okay. So I will give you my email address.
Thank you.
Nobody write this down. Paul.cannon, no, J-A-S-C-O at Microsoft.com. Email me if you have a case number and I will drive that for you. My phone's gonna start ring. Case numbers, case numbers, case numbers. Oh, Paul, Brian's like, I just signed you up for every mailing list. Clutter will save me.
Is there a known stable version of the HTTP VBSS crashing issue?
Yes, there is. And it's in my other deck that I can't open in this room. Email me. You wrote it down. I told you not to write it down. Do you have it?
Yeah.
Okay. So there is some known builds that are better than others with VBSS on these HP books. And we are absolutely working with HP and our devs to fix this, but there are some builds that perform better than others, so we could talk. Yes? Yes, so the question is, are they documented in a KB article? My answer is I believe so. It is definitely was in my pipeline to do, and then I transitioned it to somebody else that's not in this room. So if not, I will look into, I'll make sure that happens. But the short answer is we're gonna get those VBSS updates rolled out to every client. We're gonna, you know, when you get that newest client out there that should be the most stable, it's typically the older ones that are having the issues. But the last two or three updates have been very stable with VBSS. So. Any other questions? Yes, sir, way, way, way in the back. So any plans for persistence across all of the devices, when it, all the different devices? So I would say you get that best experience when deploying server-side conversation history. That's where you're gonna get that best kind of fidelity of what I see on iOS is what I see on Android. Is anybody one of those users has an iPhone, an Android, a Windows device, and a Mac? So yeah. So that's a struggle at times, and we know that. Server-side conversation history gets us the closest with that. Are you an online customer? Yeah, so online you should be in the best scenario with server-side conversation history. It is absolutely a focus of ours, and we look at that, and there's tons of improvements coming in those areas. Even with the iOS client, the Mac client, we're working on improving that. Short answer is I know that doesn't help you today, but it's definitely not the first time we've heard that. Yeah. Who knew people would have seven devices?
Anyone else? Questions?
All the way in the back.
Are they going to
Are they going to add persistent chat to the iOS mobile application? Yeah, I don't see that coming in the horizon. I'm not saying.
Sorry, I'm going to jump in. So persistent chat is a feature that's available only on the server side. It's not an online. Persistent chat is in sustain mode, and which means we're fixing bugs, but we're not necessarily rolling out new features or enhancing the client in a significant way. Enhancements include adding it to other clients. So it is where it is right now. We do anticipate having a way to address persistent chat. That's
I think there's a third-party app from MindLink or from Mikery. Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember if it's like MindLink or from Mikery, or I think it's renamed a couple times. Which is the coolest part of our ecosystem is it's extensible and customizable. If we don't have an app for that, somebody else will make one. Any other questions? Please fill out your survey results. Please.